was throughout the world. That's why by the drought it says Bechol Ha'aretzos. But by the good years it says only Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Ubechol Eretz Mitzrayim Hoyo Lochem. But in Mitzrayim there was bread because of Yosef. Now, in Pasuk 55 it says Vatirav Kol Eretz Mitzrayim, and there was a hunger in Egypt too. Why? But there was plenty of food. So the Gemara says that all Egyptians tried to gather food during the seven bad years, and they stored them in warehouses. During the seven good years, and they stored them in warehouses. But and they felt fine. I mean, when the seven bad years will start, they'll have plenty of food. But all tvua, all grain rotted the moment the drought started. So therefore, the only food that was left was Yosef's food. This is why Vatirav Kol Eretz Mitzrayim. There was hunger in Egypt because their own food, the food they counted on, was rotting. Vayitzako Omer Paro Lalochem. So they came to Paro and they said, so give us bread. Vayomer Paro Lechol Mitzrayim. So Paro said to the Egyptians, Lechu El Yosef, what are you coming to me for? Go to Yosef. I have nothing to say in this matter. Asher Yomar Lochem, Tatsu, whatever he says to them, you must do. I have no power. Now, what does it mean, Asher Yomar Lochem Tatsu? It's very difficult. Lechu Yosef and buy it from him. Ask him for it. What does it mean? Do what he says. There is nothing that he has to say. He has to give him bread. What does it mean, do what he says? So on this, we have an oral tradition that says that Yosef had already said something, and that was the reason why they came to Pharaoh to complain. Because everybody knew that Yosef was in charge of the food. What are they doing coming to Pharaoh? Let him go straight to Yosef. Says the oral tradition, that's exactly what they did. And guess what Yosef told them? You want bread? Get circumcised, then you'll get bread. So then they came to Pharaoh and they said, he wants us to get circumcised. I mean, that's ridiculous. So he said, what can I do? If he said so, you must do it. What? I don't know, it's a good question. It's a good question. It doesn't say.
Why would he want to get him circumcised?
So then is the question, what did Yosef think he's going to gain by getting everybody circumcised? What? So the one theory, like the accepted answer to this question, why what Yosef had to gain from becoming circumcised, for that everybody should get circumcised, is that he tried. I mean, there is a certain consistency in the efforts of Yosef to get everybody to, that the Jews who are going to come to Egypt, I mean, Yosef already knew that his brothers will have to come to Egypt and will have to go through the exile in Egypt. He knew that. But his purpose right now is to minimize the pain of the Jews in Egypt. And he's setting down all the ingredients necessary to make the Jewish stay in Egypt as easy as possible. One of the ways to do it is that they shouldn't be different than anybody else. Therefore, since he knew that the Jews are circumcised, right? So he figures, so if the Gentiles are not circumcised, so the Jews will be different. Like this, the Jews will be like everybody else. Just like the accepted answer. But really, there is another answer that you find, which really answers the question why Yosef wanted everybody to become circumcised. You remember, it says in the story of the kidnapping of Dinah, the raping and kidnapping of Dinah, it says like this, that the brothers came back with the father, all the brothers of Dinah came back with the father, and they went to the kidnappers, right, the king of Shechem, and the son, the prince, and they said, okay, we are ready to make a deal with you. Right? Remember, they offered, let's intermarry. The king of Shechem and the prince said, you know what, let's intermarry. We will give our daughters to you, you'll give your daughters to us, we'll intermarry. So they didn't say no. They said, yes, but there is one problem. We can't give our daughters to men who are not circumcised. So the kings go back to the people in the city, and they convince them to become circumcised. So they get circumcised, and on the third day, that's the day the body's weakest after an operation, Shimon and Levi attack, right? And they destroy the city. So what did Shimon and Levi had in mind when they tricked them into becoming circumcised? It's simple, that they should become weak so they can attack them. The question is, what did all the other brothers have in mind? More, what did Yaakov have in mind? Yaakov was part of the deal. Because when Shimon and Levi kill out the men of Shechem, what does Yaakov tell them? How can you do such a terrible thing? In other words, he did not have such a plan. So what was his plan? Why? What did he want? Why did he want the people of Shechem to become circumcised? What purpose did it have? It says that circumcising, the act of circumcision, has an effect on the heart of the person becoming circumcised. As a matter of fact, a person who is mean, hard, is called a person with an uncircumcised heart. Libom he'orel, it says. So the circumcision also affects the heart of the person. You become a softer person if you are circumcised. We don't know how it works, but we know that the mitzvah of milah has an effect on the nature of the person. You become a softer person.
Even without the mitzvah?
Oh, it's not only that. Before Matan Torah, the effects of the mitzvah, right, existed. All the mitzvahs that had special effects, right, like Yibum. Remember we spoke about Yibum, the deliberate marriage, right? There was no mitzvah then. I mean, Yehuda wasn't mechuyev, but the effects of the mitzvah still took place. Milah, even without being commanded, had such an effect. So therefore, what Yaakov wanted was to soften the heart of the people of Shechem to let out his daughter. That's all he wanted.
But after giving the Torah?
After the giving of the Torah, there is a process of the effect becomes minimized, but the chiyuv is more. You know, before Matan Torah, the mitzvahs were fulfilled for its effect. After Matan Torah, you fulfill the mitzvah because it's a commandment. Before Matan Torah, you did it because of the effect it has. There is a Ramban concerning the keeping of the laws of Nidah. There is a Ramban that says that the mitzvah of Nidah, right, the separation of husband and of a woman who is during her period, right? So for us, it's a mitzvah period. But the Ramban says that in those days before Matan Torah, there was actually a woman who was a Nidah actually had a big effect on things she touched, for instance. Meaning there was an effect on the mitzvah. That was a negative commandment. That means there is such a thing that before Matan Torah, a mitzvah that had an effect on anybody, even if someone didn't have the obligation. So therefore, the people of Shechem would have become softer had they circumcised themselves. Yosef had in mind that when the Jews come to Egypt, they should be welcomed by a group of people that their heart is softer. How can he get them to become a softer people, nicer people? By becoming circumcised. How? By blackmailing them. You want food? Okay, become circumcised. That was the purpose of Yosef. Now, the truth is, we have no idea what happened, whether it came out that way or not, whether he did it or not, whether it had any effect. But in any case, it shows the desire of Yosef to make the stay in Egypt as pleasant as possible. Now, in chapter 42, Vayar Yaakov ki Asher Mitzrayim, Yaakov, yeah, sir.
Didn't you say that Yaakov thought, but
Christian dream, that they wouldn't have to go through the monetary diagram.
Right, but they have to, right, but they have to be sometime in Egypt, whatever the amount of time that they have to be in Egypt. He sees that as part of the destiny of Klal Yisrael. Is it going to be a half a year, 2 months? Had he thought that it's going to be a long, long time, he figures, so what good is it going to do? Next generation will have a hard time. But he figured whatever it's going to be, a week, whatever it's going to be, it should be pleasure. Okay? We don't know. We don't know what happened at the end, right? Did they accept the deal? Didn't they accept the deal? Right?
Any reason to assume that, according if it says that Pharaoh said, listen to Joseph, any reason to assume it didn't work?
No, I mean, we may assume that that's the reason the Jews were actually welcomed by the Egyptians, right, in the first generation. The first generation was actually welcomed by the Egyptians, right? They didn't feel any hatred at all from the Egyptians until the generation after that. So it could be because of that. We have no information. We can speculate that yet. We have no proof for that. Now, Yaakov finds out that there is food in Egypt. Vayar Yaakov Kesher B'Mitzrayim, so he says, go and get food in Egypt. Why doesn't it say, and Yaakov was going through a hunger and therefore he sent his sons to Egypt? Say Chazal, that really the Yaakov had plenty of food left. But everybody else around them didn't have any food. So it didn't look right. Everybody's going to get food and they don't, right? So therefore it says, that's what the statement is in the last two words in Pasuk Aleph. It says, Vaya Yaakov is a retirement, Vaya Yaakov Lebonov. Lomo Tishro, why should you be seen as what? So that's what the Chazal say. Why should you be seen as someone who has food when everybody else is going through hunger? So therefore, go through the motions, go to Egypt, get food, and that's all. Right? It's 42, Membe. Really, the words have no meaning. Vayomer Yaakov Lebonov. So Yaakov said to his son, Lo mot Yisro, why should you be seen? So Rashi says, why should you be seen as people who have plenty of food? That doesn't look right. So,
how do we know they have food?
What?
How do we know that they have food?
From here, that's the source. This is the source. Lomo Tisro. Says Rashi, Lomo Tisro b'fnei b'nei Yishmoel u'b'nei Yesof ki'ilu atem tvei. Says Rashi, ki be'oi shosho adayin hoyu lohem tvei. This is more in Tiny. Right, really they have food. So they come down to Egypt. And they bow down to him. And they didn't recognize him. He recognized them. And in Pasuk 10, in Pasuk 9, it says like this. Vayizkor Yosef et ha-chalomot. And Yosef remembered the dreams. Asher cholam lohem. Since he remembered the dreams, he said to them, Vayimar lehem meraglim atem. You are spies. You came to see the weak points of our country. You are planning an attack. Now, what is the connection? You remember the dream, and therefore he said you are spies. What does one have to do with the other? And why really did he say to them you are spies? Why didn't he just say, yes, I'm Yosef, you found me, perfect, that's it?
You still got to get them to bow down to
him. Why?
Because he remembered the dream.
But he did bow down right now.
He hasn't gotten them
all. Oh, because there are two dreams. There is the first dream that says
the
first dream fulfilled 100%.
There's Binyamin.
Where does it say Binyamin in the first dream? What does it say in the first dream?
11
what?
Stocks.
Stocks? Doesn't say 11. Where does it say 11? Where does it say a number in the first dream? What is the first dream? Yours bowed down. It doesn't say a number. Since it doesn't say a number, the first dream is absolutely fulfilled. What was the meaning of the first dream? The first dream is their stalks, no number, no number 11, like in the second dream. There is no number in the first dream. So therefore, the first dream is 100% fulfilled. What is the meaning of the first dream? The stalks is a symbol of what? Of coming for food, And bowing down means I depend on you for food. They fulfilled it 100%. But what about the second dream? The second dream has already, first of all, a number, 11. And here what? There are only how many? 10, number one, first problem. Second problem, what? Father is not there, the sun is not there, and the moon is not there.
Why not?
Could be there. Why? Even though Rachel is not alive anymore, but the woman who took Rachel's place is there. Right? The servant of Rachel that took her place. So now we... So the point is like this. So now it makes sense. And he remember as ha-halomos plural. What does it mean? Even the second one, and he says, I can say who I am, because if I say who I am, they'll never come down and really bow down to me with the feeling that I'm Yosef. I mean, with the feeling that I am the king and they have to bow down. If I'm only the brother, after all. It's not a complete bowing down. Therefore, I can't allow them to recognize me. Right? Why? So say nothing. Say zero. Don't say anything. Why say you are spies? So it says in the Midrash, Rashi brings it down right away, right in the beginning, that when they came in, they decided, what?
There's something else in mind here.
For sure, he has a plan. But the immediate plan, say the Midrashim, is like this. When they came to Egypt, they decided they must find Yosef. Right? Now that they are in Egypt, they must find Yosef. So it's interesting, there is a midrash that goes on to say, so they went all over, right, they went in through different gates, through 10 different gates they went in, and they started looking for Yosef, right? And in one midrash it says, they went to all the houses of prostitution in Egypt to find Yosef. They figured such a good looking boy, where else would he be? So when the report came to Yosef, that they came in through different gates and they went around, he said, there must be some kind of a plan, miracle in Matthew. Why? Because now, if they continue searching what happens, they may get to the truth that Yosef was by Potiphar, and now the moment I call them spies, they'll be afraid to ask any questions, because they'll know if I ask too many questions, that will prove that we are spies. So from now on, he guarantees and they won't ask any more questions. That's the reason why they say he says to them, you are spies. You are spies. So he closes them, he cuts out the possibility of their really finding out that he's Yosef. Okay? That's the reason why it's a miracle. It's in the Nefer, I can't remember exactly. So he says to them, okay, so they start telling him, no, we are really brothers, we are not spies, right? And since we are brothers, it doesn't make sense that a father would send 10 sons and all of them should be spies, right? So he said, I don't believe you. The only way that I'll believe you is if you bring your younger son. Meanwhile, I'll keep one of you here, right? And then I can really tell, right? If, for instance, I can make a test. If Binyamin recognizes Shimon, right, because he plans to take Shimon, then I'll really know that you are saying the truth. Oh, whatever it is, I'll take one of you, I'll lock him up. Meanwhile, that will guarantee me that you'll bring your younger brother, and in this way I'll know for sure that it's true what you are saying. What does he really have in mind? Once the younger brother comes, one, first of all, he fulfills the 11 stars, because meanwhile there are only 10 stars bowing down to him. And another guarantee, if Binyamin is here, Yaakov will not allow Binyamin to come alone. He is convinced, Yosef, right, that if Binyamin is here, the father is going to come. And if the father is going to come, the whole family is going to come, the mother too. And in this way they'll all come to him, all bow down to him, and the second dream will be fulfilled, and that's it.
Why not shoot for the whole works right from the start instead of leaving it to chance?
Again?
Why not shoot for the whole family right from the start instead of leaving it to chance?
In other words, why didn't he say, let the father come to and the mother, then I'll know that it's the truth? Yeah? No, no, bowing down to people was a common expression of respect that was permitted. Right? Okay. To bow down, Avraham Avinu bows down in front of the three visitors that come to him, right? These things that are simple Arabs, he bows down to them. It's just a way of saying hello. I mean, in those days, that's the way you said hello to somebody you wanted to feel important. Okay? Now, the reason why he really doesn't want to say directly, tell your father to come, right? Why? Not only suspicious, because there is a little bit for there is a desire of Yosef to minimize. I mean, he's in a very difficult position. In the one hand, he wants him to bow down to him, but he's not allowed to ask it directly, because there is a chesorn, there is a lack in the respect for the father. Remember, he's in a very difficult position, and he suffers for it. By the way, every time he hears Yaakov calling him Adoni or the brothers, like he's suffering. Yosef is suffering because he is the one they are bowing down to. Okay, and he's not allowed to. On the other hand, he has to do it for the fulfillment of the dream. So if he says directly, "I want your father to come," that in itself is a chesorin kibud av. It's a lack of kibud av. If he just says, "Let Binyamin come," and automatically Yaakov will come, okay? And that's something automatic. It's not direct. It takes away from the directness. Yes, but even an avera lishmo, you are supposed to minimize the avera.
Yeah, yep. So he's taking a chance there and calculating risk.
He's sure that Yaakov will not let Binyamin go. Right? What?
Well, in history, you see
again. He wasn't 100% wrong. Right? He's not 100% wrong. I mean, had he, like the Meshe Chokma says, if he would have been able to control himself and not cry, he would have won out. Yaakov would have come. Right? Because he had the key to the situation. His plan was right. Yaakov couldn't let Binyamin stay in Egypt, and he shouldn't be there. Impossible. Right? Yaakov can't cut himself off from Binyamin. So, now, in Posuk Chof Aleph, Vayomru Ish Elohim. So the brothers speak to each other and they say the following. Avol Hashemim Anachnu. We realize now we are guilty. Alochinu, our brother, Asheroinu Tzoras Nafshon, we saw how he was suffering. He was begging God, "Don't sell me, don't kill me." We didn't listen to him. Now it's Yosef. This is why we are going through so much trouble now. Now, what trouble did they go to? They were in jail for 3 days. It says before in Pasuk 17, it says they were in jail for 3 days. And then it says in Pasuk 19, "I'll take Achichem Echod." Your brother Echod, and who was that? The one. You see, how do you say one of the brothers? How would you say in Hebrew, one of the brothers? I'll take one of the brothers as a, to make sure that you bring the other one. How would you say one of the brothers? What? Echod? Echod me'achim. What does it say? In Pasuk 19, in Kenimatem, Achichem Echod. How would you translate really Achichem Echod Yoter? The brother, the one. What does it mean, the one? Not one of the brothers. Brother, the one. The one that what?
One of the judges.
Exactly. Who was that?
Shimon.
Shimon. Right? So they say, "Hey, that's too much of a coincidence. Listen to this. We are in jail. The one that sold Yosef, that put Yosef in the pit, the one that wanted to kill him, the one is taken and he's kept in jail. That's no coincidence. This is mido keneged mido, measure for measure. We are being punished for having sold Yosef." Okay?
You're saying that they're wrong when they cross them as a base then?
I don't know. But what does it say here? That they are having charity, they are regretting it. Right? On the surface, it sounds, I mean, I won't answer your question because you'll see at the end what the answer is going to be. On the surface, it sounds like they're doing tshuvah for the sale of Yosef. Okay? They're doing tshuvah. Avala shayni manachim. And in Pasuk 22, Vayan Ruvein osom. So Ruvein answered them, Halo yomarti aleichem leimor al techtu bayelet. I told you not to do it for loishematem, and you didn't listen. Vegam domoy aleini drosh. What does it mean, Vayan Ruvein? What does Ruvein want from them? That's exactly what they said. What does it mean? And Ruvein says, didn't I tell you, don't sin against the boy?
Almost 20 years later.
So? I mean, this is the first time that they are faced with the midah keneged midah, measure for measure. They never experienced something so terrible. That first of all, they are kept in jail for 3 days. Now they have to bring the Yomen. They have to keep Shimon in jail. I mean, it's terrible what's happening to them. They see the hand of God. But what is the argument between Reuben and the brothers? The brothers say, yeah, we sinned. Says Reuben, didn't I tell you that you sinned? That's not the I told you so type of an argument. There's no argument here. So the pshat is that they didn't say we were wrong. It doesn't say in Pasuk 21 we were wrong. If we pay attention, they do not admit that they are wrong. They are say like this, Avol Hashemim Anachnu, we are wrong. Alochinu Asheroinu Tzoras Nafshoi, we saw how much he didn't want to be sold. Veloy Shomonu, we didn't listen to him. What does it mean? Of course we have all the right in the world to listen to him. But what about our characteristic of mercy? It didn't even bother us that he was begging us. So what are they regretting? Not that they sold him. They sold him? They were 100% right. But we regret that he didn't even bother us. We had no rachmonis. We had no pity on him. Says Reuben, you should regret much more than that. I told you that the whole sale was wrong. That's the argument between Reuben and them. In other words, are they really doing tshuva? It's not really tshuva. It's a partial tshuva. It's only a tshuva for not feeling badly that Yosef is begging them and they are not taking it into account. But it's not a tshuva for the actual sale. So, this is why, okay, so the story continues. They buy food and they pay for it and they went away. And in Pasuk 27, Vayiftach po echot esakoi, the one. Which the one? Which is the other? The one. Who else was involved in this actively in the sale of Yosef or in trying to kill Yosef?
Lady.
The idea was he would have putting him into the thing. But who was behind it? Lady. So the Midrash says really, it was Lady who opened up his sack of Echot, because the first Echot is in jail. The second Echot opens up and he says, the money's there. That means there's another trick going on here. The money for the food that they just bought is there. Bamoloin, where do they find it? In the hotel. You know, in the word malon means a place to sleep, in the sleeping place, wherever they slept for the night. And they realize that something is going on. Vayomer lechov, and he says, Vayomer lechov, and he says to his brothers, listen, I found my money in Pasuk 28. Vayetze libom, it's as if like they were in a state of shock. Vayecherdu ish elohim leimor. Manzo ish otro loikim lonu. What's God doing to us? So, really the question is, what does it mean, what's God doing to us? They already gave the answer before. They said already, God is paying us back for selling Yosef. Right? So it's interesting, the Gemara in Tainus, you know, the Gemara in Tainus, the Tess Omedalev, says like this, the Gemara darshens the Pasuk. It says a Pasuk in Mishlei, forgot the Pasuk already, but the Tess Omedalev says like this. A person does something wrong and then he blames God. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Where do we see it in the Torah, such a thing? That you do something wrong and then you blame God? Shenemar, ma zoish oso elokim lonu. What is it that God is doing to us? Which means, you do something wrong, right? And he blames us. And you blame him, you blame God. What are you blaming God for? It's your fault. So it's very, very difficult. I mean, what? How can they say what is God doing to us? They themselves, a few psukim before, they said clearly, right? We were wrong. So there are two answers. It's interesting. The Maharsho, in the back of the Gemara, in the Sintainet, says, it's talking about Yosef. In other words, they are saying like this. No matter how bad it was, but we already regretted it. We already did tshuva. So why is it that God is still punishing us? We already did tshuva. But interesting. What?
According to Ruben, we did.
Oh, the point is that really it wasn't tshuva. It wasn't a tshuva shleimah. The Torah Tmimo said something else, an interesting insight. What does the Gemara say? People blame God when they do something wrong. What's the proof? They blame God when they did something wrong. Says the Torah Tmimo, we're not talking about the sale of Yosef. What's wrong is when you go to a store and you buy something, you have to check the merchandise. Had they checked the merchandise, at the moment of buying, what would have happened? They would have found the money right there and giving it back right then. So they made a mistake. They are not good businessmen. They didn't check the merchandise. Then you blame God. That's how the Torah Tmimo learns. Interesting. Not here, because the Gemara doesn't say what is it that they did wrong. Everybody assumes that it did wrong was they sold Yosef and now you're complaining. The Torah is not even talking about it. The selling of Yosef, they knew that they have to get punished. But they did something wrong and they didn't check the merchandise. So what do you blame God if you don't check your merchandise? That's how the Torah will learn. Very cute, very interesting.
Shouldn't
we reverse it to
the Neva?
What?
Well, the verse we got over here would fit in better over here, wouldn't it?
Really, I mean, it's at this point where I said, you know, according to Reuven, it is answered. Support. Let me just go on a little bit. Now, they come home, and it's interesting. Again, it's the same Marshal in the Sessor and Beijing Tainet. At which point did they find the money? Take a look in Pasuk Lamed Hei 35. They come home in front of their father. They open up their sack, and here all the money is returned. So they were afraid. So what does it seem from Pasuk 35? When did they find the money? When they got home. But we just finished saying that it was in the Malone, it was in the hotel.
So maybe they all didn't open their sack.
Oh, so that's what the Marshal says. If you pay attention, in the hotel it says the one, only lady opened his sack, he says. And everybody else didn't. The Marshal says even more. For some reason, he says, lady's money was in the open as soon as he opened it. The other one's money was at the bottom. So therefore, only when they took out everything, they found the money. Right? So, because he wanted Levi to suffer before everybody else, because Levi was involved. So therefore, he really found it in the hotel, but all the other brothers found it at home. Right?
Yosef or Hashem?
What?
Yosef.
Yosef. This was the plan of Yosef. It's all planned out by Yosef.
Why
Levi? Because Levi was involved in the whole plan to kill Yosef.
Why
Levi
is Yosef taking, quote, revenge here?
So the point is, that's a very important thing. You know, you have to understand the biblical people. They are very involved in the idea of rectifying sin. Rectifying sin. So even though you would say, well, that's God's business, not man's business, that's for average men. But the idea of rectifying sin is a very important thing. Very important. He feels that if they go through certain experiences that would rectify the sin of selling him, they wouldn't have to suffer the consequences. So by causing Levi Meaning, the reason why average people can't do it, because it's very dangerous. Because if you enjoy your job, you'll be punished, right? If you enjoy the revenge, right, that you're not allowed to do it. You have to do it with an absolutely pure heart for the sake of rectification. The way Pinchas killed Zimri. He didn't do it because he hated him. He didn't do it because he wanted to take revenge. He did it l'shem shamayim. If you do it l'shem shamayim, in such a way you can rectify the sin, therefore you won't suffer the consequences. It's a very important concept. The whole idea of a court killing a person who deserves the death penalty is not revenge. It's ubiyarto for romi kirbecho, uprooting the evil, not to have to suffer the consequences. So if Levi suffers, that and that will bring him the idea that I'm more responsible than everybody else. That would rectify the thing. That is the purpose why Yosef is doing it in such a way.
And I don't know how to approach him in court now.
Yeah.
We could have said that maybe the other brothers did check their, or someone checked their weed on the spot, so there was no need for all the brothers to check it. They got to come along. So maybe check their weed. You know what I'm saying?
The
the brothers weren't good businessmen because they didn't check the merchandise.
Right.
But we can say that they did check it and there was no money.
According to the Marsho, I know. The Torah ignores the Marsho. He ignores, even though he brings them down, but he ignores. He says, no, you don't have to say like the Marsho. Therefore, you don't have to say that only Levi opened it up in the Maloy, that everybody did, right? And I mean, he has a pshat. I mean, he doesn't accept the pshat that only Levi opened it up in the hotel and everybody else opened it up when they came home. He learned that everybody opened it up in the hotel, right? And they found it. Then when they came home, they opened it again and showed it to the father and they feared again. That's how the Torah Tmimo learns. That, you know, they found it twice. That every time they saw it, the fear, they were in fear again. That's how it's the Marsho. I should have pointed out, it's the Marsho who learns that in the hotel only Levi opened it up. That's why it says Ho Echod. Right? And everybody else opened it up later. So according to the Torah Tmimo, it's okay that they are all bad businessmen. They all didn't take their merchandise when they were supposed to.
Can't you combine and you say if one is bad, they're all bad? I mean,
what? I don't know.
Oh, the spot after the place?
Could be.
Yeah. The fact that none of the brothers took their merchandise, could that be another proof that Yaakov had sent their food? Because if you really cared about the merchandise, and you would take it.
It's not there. That was the reason why they didn't. They only bought it just to make that people could see that they bought it, so therefore they didn't really care, you know, about the food.
What's
that? Again, that what?
Maybe suffer more.
That, again, sorry.
Maybe Tanya got away and...
Oh, that's the Maharsha. Maharsha on Tanya.
Is that just a kind of like beating today being able to
By Hasidic, right, by the Hasidic rabbis, you find it very often, the idea of giving people advice for the tikkun. In other words, what should be your tikkun? Do such and such and such, and that will be your tikkun. The awareness of the tikkun, yes. So, now, Vayomer in Pasuk Lamed Vov, Vayomer aleihem Yaakov avihem. So Yaakov tells them, because Osi shikaltem, Yosef eineno. Look, Yosef is not around. Shimon eineno. Ves binyomen tikochu. You're gonna take binyomen. Olai hoyu kulono. If you remember a few weeks ago, I told the goyim, the Gaon of Vilna, shout in Olai hoyu kulono, right? Olai hoyu kulono. Everything happened to me already. What does it mean that Yaakov says everything happened to me already? Remember the Gaon of Vilna?
Mm-hmm.
The Gaon of Vilna says that I and Lamed Yud is an acronym for something that he had the Kabbalah, that he had received from his mother, a sign of what's going to go wrong in his life. Three things are going to go wrong in his life. when he's afraid to go into his father to steal the blessing, his mother says, "Don't worry, Olai kilelos chodmi." Simple translation is, "I'm taking the curse on myself." The Gaon of Vilna said that Olai kilelos chodmi means Esav, Lavan, Yosef. The three things that will be bad in your life are Esav, your constant fear of Esav, Lavan, your terrible times in the house of Lavan and all the cheating that he does against you, and Yosef, the disappearance of Yosef. Besides that, you have nothing to fear.
Over there.
So, he said, that's the chat over here. So Yaakov says,
who told him?
His mother, Rivka. Rivka says to Yaakov, Olai kilelos, for your curse is only Ayin Lamed Yud. So he says, this is Yad, Vemar Lehem Yaakov Abiyem. Yosef Einenu. Veshimon Einenu. Shimon doesn't even fit in. Where does Shimon fit in the curse? And now Binyamin Tikochu, how can it be Olai Hoyu Kulono? That's neither Ayin Lamed or Yud. How can it happen?
Rashi learns the trouble of Dina, he says, and he lists a few others in there as well.
Right. Of course, and the Gaon of Vilna is that his own child.
So what does he do with like Dina?
What do you mean?
He doesn't call
why
it trouble?
That's not considered a major curse in his life. I mean, the major curse in his life are only the three.
What would be the Makalik to differentiate why that wasn't so terrible?
I mean, first of all, qualitatively different. I mean, there's a difference between what he suffered because of Yosef, right, or Esav and Lavan, personally, and Dina. With Dina is really the problem of Dina, right? I mean, that's something that, of course, that he feels badly for his daughter. But there is a qualitative difference between something that's his own personal experience or somebody else's experience, right? Well, I mean, there's Dina's problem.
Well, it's difficult to make one different
Dina,
no? Rama
tried to destroy him physically, and the loss of Yosef is a spiritual something, and that's entirely different than what happened to Dina. We're thinking in our terms, but we're not thinking in his terms.
Dina was relatively short person, by Esau's view,
a long time. So that's the other thing I was going to say, quantitatively different. Right. Because in reality, what about Shimon? Right. What about when they came back and Shimon wasn't around? Didn't he suffer because of that? How come that is not considered one of the things he suffered? Obviously, because quantitatively it doesn't count. It's too short a time. It doesn't take up a long period, right? And there were other things in his life, right? The Malach, that he fought with the Malach. Unless you say that's included in NATO, right? Or the death of Rochel.
And it's Russian,
right? That's a very shocking experience, but then he goes on, life goes on. It's not like he doesn't take cut a long period of his life and his effort, right? Ace of love on Yosef changes his life completely. Those are the three curses that changes his life. According to the Goyen, I'm not saying that, according to the Goyen. Okay.
I have that for that, right? But he stole her, it's Gizela. Okay? And this is why I said before she was a katana, this could be understood better. She doesn't have her own dad, right? And he's taking her away. He's stealing her. This is kidnapping. Kidnapping is also stealing. The Hamer of the Yadu Velo Danu. They saw, they knew about it, and they didn't judge it. Ubenoch Nerad Beit Echod of the Dain Echod below us up. The Alpi Krovin, and a Ben Noach also can be put to death with one witness, with one judge, without warning, and even through relatives. Avelo Beidus Isha Avelo Kodin Isha Lehem. But a woman cannot be a judge even for Bnei Noach. Okay. So therefore, the Rambam says over here that the whole city of Shechem was guilty, because they did not judge when this evil, when this Aveira, which is Chayav Nisa, was done in their midst. So therefore the whole city of Shechem are obligated, are punishable.
Amen.
And therefore they were Chayav Nisa. And since they're Chayav Nisa...
Who is the witness?
What?
Who is the witness?
Who is the witness? There were people that knew. That people knew.
You don't need witnesses.
No, Yaakov
they were
one
killed. Who was the witness?
What do you mean, who was the witness?
Everybody
all the people in Shechem knew what I'd done over here. First of all, he admitted it. He said that he did it. Right?
There's no law by the Bnei Noach that you can't hide yourself in.
First of all, people knew. Was that something?
People outside the city.
No, people in Shechem. People in the city.
Want to be postulated because they're all involved in the case?
No! Why are they involved in the case? Here there's a guy...